Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Keel. And today we have Walter Johnson, founder of Sonos Capital, on the show.
Yes.
Before we dive in, I want to ask you a real quick favor. Would you mind taking an extra 30 seconds to head over to wherever you listen to this and rate this podcast for me? This helps us get more listeners, and it means the absolute world to me. So thanks for making my day with that review of the show. All right, let's dive in. Walter Johnson is the founder of Sonos Capital, a real estate investment firm that provides opportunities for individuals to invest in mobile home parks across the country. Walter has a background in finance, starting his career as a mortgage banker with Security Mortgage Corporation back in 2004. Based in Phoenix, Arizona, Sonos Capital was started in 2016, and Walter has grown into being a current board member on the Manufactured Housing Association in the state of Arizona, and was also appointed by the mayor of Mesa, Arizona, to facilitate more affordable housing in the area. Walter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, excited to get to know you. You know, again, we met on LinkedIn. Yeah. I love your content, love what you put out there. I have to ask, are you like in a boat right now in a marina?
Yeah, but yes.
That's so awesome. Yeah. That's like the ultimate flex, right? Like, hey, I'm tuning in from a yacht.
Kind of, right. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing.
Well, for those of us on YouTube watching, you know, this is such an amazing view. I think this is probably, this tops all of my other backgrounds. I didn't know if it was one of those like fake ones that's like the AI background that's like, hey, I'm...
No. No, I've been here for the last few days. So no.
That's so awesome. That's super cool. Walter, would you mind, you know, sharing your story and telling us a little bit about how you got into ultimately investing into mobile home parks?
Sure. Yeah. So a little bit about my story. So Security Mortgage was 2004, but it started, I would say, a little bit before that, a few years before that, with another company. And I'll explain that and how the drive, my drive developed over the years. So I had a mentor. This is actually a great story. I had a mentor in Southern California named Ed Garcia, and he taught me a lot about real estate. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I wouldn't say bad things happen, but unfortunate things happen to you to where it catapults you in life. So I used to work at UPS. I hurt my back, and luckily I was on disability or so. And I found him while I was on disability. So I used to go to his office and just listen to him, because that's the kind of the only thing I could do. I couldn't work. And he owned, you know, strip malls, shopping malls. He was a big time player. So I got a lot of information from him. And I went to visit my cousin in Arizona. Now, this is April of 2001. I've seen how cheap the real estate was. I mean, it was. I think you could have bought like a brand new Ford Mustang was more expensive than a house, right, in Arizona back at that time. Right?
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. You used to see billboards. It was like brand new homes for, you know, they were out the outskirts of Phoenix, but you see brand new homes starting at $35,000. It was an amazing time. And so I went to visit my cousin on a Friday, and then I hung out with him for that till Monday. And then 2 days later, went back home, Southern California, packed all my bags and moved to Arizona. And I said a prayer, got in that Mustang with $1,000 to my name, and just kind of made it happen. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's how I started. And then how I got into mortgage broker, or, you know, loan officer. It's nothing what it is now. You had to pay your dues. You had to know someone. So, you know, you looked in paper for jobs, and I found one and I interviewed for it, and they said, call us back. I forget what day, the actual day it was, but that day they said, call us back, was September 11th. Right.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I seen the, like a lot of us did, we actually seen the unfortunate Twin Towers go down. So I seen that, and I was actually supposed to call him back, you know, in a few hours at 11 a.m. And I was like, I don't think I have a job. Like, who knows what's going on with the world? And I called, and they said, we appreciate you calling at the right time and right day. You're actually hired. And so what I did is that I never took an opportunity for granted ever since then. Yes.
Just calling at that time, they were like, hey, this guy follows through. We're going to hire him.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, it was life-changing. And that's actually how I got into finance.
That is such an awesome story. It's like what Charlie Munger says, like one of his things, he's like, hey, how to like fail at life, right? He's like invert, always invert. Don't be reliable, right? But if you can be reliable, like who doesn't want to work with someone that's reliable? That's so cool. So yeah,
especially on that day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what a crazy day. It had to be super hectic. Yeah. So you were working at UPS in California, got a back injury, were on disability, found a mentor, Ed Garcia, learned about real estate. And this was not mobile home parks. That was just strictly
single family homes.
Okay. Single
family. And apartment buildings. Yes.
Okay. And apartment buildings. And then you moved to Arizona, got into, mortgage banking. And that was what year?
So that was September 2001 when I got my job.
And then how long did you work there?
For a couple years, 2 years. Two and a half years.
Okay. Gotcha. I mean, that was before the bubble, right? So that was probably a good time to be a mortgage banker.
Yeah. Who knew, right? Who knew? Yes. Yeah. We were actually the first people to do, remember LendingTree, that huge company now?
Yeah.
So they were just starting off. So we actually were the first company in Arizona to actually do LendingTree leads. Wow. So imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. In college, this was 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
I had an internship at Merrill Lynch, and one of the FAs there, you know, was like, hey, if you want to make a lot of money, you need to go be a mortgage banker. Like that's where you could really crank it. You're going to work crazy hours and you're going to hustle.
Yeah.
But that's where you could really crush it. But obviously that was right before the bubble popped and the housing, crisis in 2008, 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
But wow, super cool. And then, tell us, Walter, how did you get to mobile home parks? Like where did that come from?
Yes. So my first investment property was a city called Avondale. It was actually a single family home built by National D.R. Horton. It was off the lake. I paid $146,000 for that house. The girl I was dating, she was going to ASU. She gave me, ASU, like grant money or something like that, or, for money for books. And she says, Walter, I believe in you. So she gave me $1,500 to actually put down on that house, a brand new house to get built. And of course I paid her back, but I'll just never forget that. So I drove by that house probably every week when it was a plot of dirt, when it was framed. Throughout the stages, I went by that place every Saturday after work because I worked on weekends because I just wanted to work, right? Because I see my dream actually happening. And so I closed on that, I would say about 8 or 9 months later. And that was 2002. And then I bought my first fourplex. And then I bought a loft. So I had two rental properties before I bought a place for myself. So I was actually still living in an apartment building with no furniture. Yeah. And literally no furniture. I think I had like a portable DVD player or something like that. And that's just how I entertained myself.
That's so good.
I was actually doing mortgages and I had a client. And this is actually how I get properties, mobile home parks now. So I found this tip and I was doing... There was like FHA deals to where if a borrower is out of 3 years of bankruptcy, they can qualify for FHA mortgage. And so I found this tip by a successful mortgage broker saying, if you actually mail to these people, they will call you and, you can possibly get them qualified for a new loan. Because rates were at, rates were at like 7%, then they just start dropping to the sixes and they were able to save money. And so I think I spent like $6,000 on mailers and I made my money back, but I got two calls. One, actually three calls, two people I helped and they were really grateful. And then all of them I actually helped. But the third person is a guy by the name of Jerry. So Jerry was actually in the mobile home industry in mobile home park. And so this is probably 2005-ish, right? This is actually at Security Mortgage. And he was so grateful that I was able to help him out. And this is back in the days to where we had fax machines. So how he communicated, he actually didn't call me. He faxed me and said, can you really help me? If you can, here's my phone number, Jerry 623, you know, his phone number. So I called him back and I says, yes, I think I can help you. 100% helped him. I think he was like 5 years out of bankruptcy. He had a 710 FICO score. I mean, he was like a perfect candidate. So I saved him, I think it was like $600 or $700 a month. So in return, we just liked each other. And he was older. I think at the time he was like mid-60s. He's like, well, yeah, I like you, Walter. And he says, have you ever thought about, you know, investing in mobile home parks? Well, at the time, I think I had, maybe like a 24 or so homes and, you know, apartments and land. And I said, no, I'm good. You know, I had all of the stuff that would impress people at a cocktail party. How about that? Right. And I never looked at it until after the recession, 2012, I looked at one. And it was in Phoenix proper. And I didn't know anything about him. I really didn't know anything about him. But it was like $390,000 and it was grossing $45,000 a month. I didn't know how that worked. It seemed like a lot of money. So I said, let me actually start looking into this. So I just started studying him. And I really studied him to where I was actually comfortable. Now, what I did, and maybe, you know, each his own, but I called people and just got information. So the mentor that I had, Ed, he says, call people and get information about a property. Even if you, and he was going to be my, you know, of course, capital partner, but he says, even if we don't buy that property, you're actually going to learn a lot about that property, but contacting the owners and just finding out more information about the reason why they're going to sell, you know, what the income is, what the expenses are, what the taxes are, how many, you know, what's the vacancy. I got a lot of information by just doing it myself. So after the 3 years, I said, oh, well, remember how I actually got Jerry Rusko to our sent out mailers? Well, I did that to a mobile home park owners. And I kid you not. And I think I spent $1,200 and I flipped it, made six figures.
Wow.
Right. But then the next year I bought it back for, and I was like, I can't believe I sold that. Cause I seen the mechanics. I knew about it. I've been studying it for years. And so I bought it back the next year for like $1 million more.
Same property.
Same property. Yeah. It was almost the same exact year almost. I think I sold it October 2017, and I bought it back like October 2018.
Wow. Yeah. Same mobile home park. Just
same exact thing. Yep.
Paid more for it. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And that was your first park that you bought. And then from there, it was just the mailers that's how you're like getting new deals and are using your own capital to continue buying parks and when you decided to take on investors.
Yes. So I started buying parks and I actually double escrowed a few, but I talked to several owners about parks. So technically I double escrowed them. So I would say technically I owned them, but technically I didn't.
Like wholesaled them, assigned them?
No, I closed escrow. I just sold them the same day.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you buy it, but then you double close. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I was using actually other people's capital as well. There was one in, I would say, the southwest of Arizona that I bought. And I seen this one actually online and I called him and he was actually selling it. He's had it for a long time. It was in his family. And he was older, so he loved to talk about parks and the history of parks. And he says, yeah, well, when we had them all, I think he only had about 7 or 8 of them or something. He says, yeah, well, we were making about $150,000 a month. And I'm like, whoa, right? You know, he caught my interest really fast, right? And so I learned a lot from him. And then, so it was my own capital. Or no, not that one. It was actually someone else's capital, a mentor of mine here in Phoenix that I still talk to this day, named Brian. And then after that, then I started, I used my capital for a lot of projects. So apartment buildings, a lot of apartment buildings. And I didn't start attracting and taking in other people's capital until, say, after I sold that park, like 155 space park, said I did really well. So let me do 10 of these. that was a mom and pop. The husband had health issues, and I did extremely well. And I said, I would like to do this again.
Situation, or did you like buy it and do value add stuff to it? Or
yeah, I bought it. Yeah, value add. Yeah, so I learned a lot. So Jerry actually helped me out. He actually introduced me to a lot of connections in the mobile home park space. The mobile home park space is a small knit community, and I learned a lot. I got partners with Clayton Holmes. He introduced me to managers at other parks that let me know how parks are really ran. You know, I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to buy this manufactured home and make it nice, like I would live in it. And most of the time, it's just going overboard. Like,
yeah,
I'm on a boat right now, so no pun intended. But so, you know, I actually don't have to do all that. Like, I did 9-foot ceilings and recessed lightings and hardwood, you know, cabinets, and you don't have to do all that stuff, right? So there's like a middle ground.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how you got educated, mostly was just talking to Jerry and just calling around. Like, did you ever go to the boot camp, like the Frank and Dave boot camp or anything? Or
I did that way after I bought a park. Yes, I did that way after, because I was actually looking at, you know, I didn't know how parks really, really ran. Actually, that's how I got involved with the Manufactured Housing Association. I got there and I went there and I was like, how do I get a lease agreement? Like, I had no idea, right? And they'll tease me today. They're like, Walter, when you walked in our office, you look like a deer in headlights. You look like you were so scared. Wow. And so, yeah. And I learned a lot by really example. Frank and Dave are actually great. Really great educators, but a lot of, I would say 95% of the things I learned was based on real life experience.
That's so cool. And what does your portfolio look like now of mobile home?
So we're closing on 102 space park. We're actually looking at and I'll just tell you, like, you know, what we're looking at today. We put a contract on a 52 space park in Phoenix proper. We're looking at in negotiations with the 487 space park is Southern Arizona as well. So that's kind of what we have on our plate as of today.
Gotcha. But you don't own anything right now that you're actively
managing. So I sold everything. The reason why I sold everything is actually I wanted to do what's called, you know, a full cycle. Yeah. And then I actually have experience to raise capital. So
gotcha.
I think when we're dealing with investors and institutional investors, they'll ask me, hey, Walter, have you ever went full cycle? Well, I don't, you know, I want to be truthful and just, if I held on everything, I would say no. Mm-hmm. But I actually wanted to go full cycle.
Gotcha. Yeah. What do you think, you know, from your time owning parks was like mm-hmm. the toughest hurdle to overcome in your eyes?
The toughest was making actually a decision to buy a mobile home park. Yes.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, one of my mentors, Ryan Smith of Elevation Capital, he always tells the story how he bought this mobile home park in a town in Tennessee, and like, he went up there for closing and he actually like vomited. Like, he was so nervous, like the day mm-hmm. of closing, that he was like, what am I doing? I'm buying a trailer park. And it was like, so, you know, against the grain, so against the usual thing that, like, I agree. That's, it's like the decision to do what we do is a tough part, right? Cause like, it seems way out for a lot of people.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. I can see how somebody can vomit. What I did was that I actually went out for a steak dinner and looked at a view and just calmed my nerves down. I don't think if I would have done that, I would probably just be vomiting as well. So,
cause you're nervous, right? Cause you're signing on a lot of debt. You're taking a big risk. So, you know, luckily it has played out well, but yeah, it's a nerve wracking thing. So that's a good hurdle. Tell us about you know, what you're doing. It looks like you have a lot of deals that you're looking at and you have offers out on. Like, how are you guys mm-hmm. pivoting around higher interest rates? Like, what do those deals look like?
That's a profound question. I would say higher interest rates necessarily don't matter. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because if you actually find the right deal, and let's just say the interest rate is at 7.5-8%. Mm-hmm. But in mobile home parks, we actually know that the cap rate can be 13% when you're buying it, right? Well, that difference between the interest rate and the cap rate you get a great cash return, cash on cash return, when you actually close in the property. And when we're actually looking at that, at properties, we're looking at, I don't look at properties that are 90%, 100% occupied. I'm looking for something that I can do what's called value add. So I can increase the rents, decrease expenses, and put in new homes, new or used homes. So when I have that double digit return, when I close, and then I'm able to put in, you know, new or used homes, increase the lot rents to market, decrease expenses. You know, that's pretty much our strategy. Yes.
Is buying value add stuff, infilling. 100%. You know, you're not buying something stabilized in Phoenix proper. Mm-hmm. You're buying stuff that needs work.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. What mistakes have you made in mobile home park investing
that you can
learn from?
A lot. Don't ever think you know more than the manager. That's one. They're on the ground level every day. They actually deal with tenants. I would say, even though they may work for you, they have a lot of knowledge. They're day in and day out. Most likely they live on the property, and you can learn a lot by just sitting there and actually just working side by side with them. That's one. And respecting their position. So even though they work for you, they live at a mobile home park, you know, I would say they offer a vast amount of knowledge.
Totally.
That's one. Two is that get to know vendors and the area as much as possible. So if you can sponsor a baseball team or a fair, you know, county fair, and show up, because what usually happens is that when you're buying for mom and pop and it actually has high vacancies, you need to fill those spaces up, and it actually has high expenses, most likely there's a reputation in that park. So my recommendation is actually, you know, go in the area, talk to people, you know, talk to the local, you know, law enforcement, be friends with the organizations and neighborhoods around that park.
That's good. Yeah. That's building a community. That's really, that's a good idea. How about utility infrastructure? You know, what are some things you've learned from, you know, dealing with these parks, which are typically know, built in the 1950s, 1960s, and, you know, have older infrastructure?
Yeah. So I've purchased parks that had private utilities, which is basically your own power company. You're just getting it from a source. I wouldn't necessarily say that's a bad idea, because the park can actually still generate returns. Just know that you're actually going to have a huge utility bill in the winter or the summer. Pair for that. And just beyond that, I don't think they're bad deals. I think, you know, no park is actually perfect, right? But there's actually opportunity in those parks as well.
Okay.
And I would stay on it. I would say, spend a little bit more money. I'm pretty sure that, you know, maybe your audience actually has come across, private utilities to where they have leach fields and you have to replace the sewers, pump out the sewer system. I would say the pumps, just spend the extra few hundred dollars from, let's say, a 2 horsepower to a 5 or 6 horsepower pump. And that actually decreased your expenses as well. What we did, we actually put a chemical, and I can't remember the name right now, but our maintenance guy just put that chemical down our sewer, so it dissolves the balloons or the diapers or the debris that actually goes in our sewer system. And he did that about 3 times a week. We didn't have any issues.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good tip.
Yeah. I'll email that over to you, the actual name. And I think it was I think we bought it in 5 gallons or so, and the 5 gallons lasted for about a month or so, maybe 3 weeks. And I think it was, you know, maybe $100 or something like that, or $150.
Wow.
But it saved us. Yeah. I think we got our pumps pumped out one time, and we got a bill for like $2,500, but that $150 chemical, we never had that problem again. So we never had to pay that $2,500.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Walter, if you were going to invest passively, you know, into a syndication or an investment fund, mm-hmm. Passively into the mobile home park asset class, what are the most important things that you would look for?
I would look for a track record. I would look for somebody that's actually has enthusiasm about the industry and not actually looking to just make money. Because I believe that when somebody's just making money and they experience a few hurdles, they actually tend to give up, because money's great, but passion actually goes further. And that's what I would look for. And I will actually look for someone that would educate me on the actual properties or yeah, the properties. So I can get some experience.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And what would be the best way to do that? Like to vet that operator, to look at that track record, like would you just get on the phone with them or is there other
stuff? Yeah. I would get on the phone with them. I would actually check their references. I would actually check, their past experience on projects. That's what I would do. Yes. And I would say, I actually have an investor that's going to come to a park that we're looking at. They're flying in, I think on the 6th and 6th or 7th. And I'm going to actually take them to a park. And so when you're able to do that and show them, this is what our parks look like. This is how they operate. I think a lot of action people like to be hands-on. They like to see, feel, and touch. Yeah.
I agree. And I know you post about this, on LinkedIn and some other areas is Wall Street, right? It's like, you can't really touch it, right? Like, hey, you bought this, you sold that, but mobile home parks and real assets, you get that privilege, right? You can touch it, you can see it, and that makes it unique and pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say invest socially. How about that? Cause we're really social, creatures, human beings. And if you can actually walk the park, say hi to a resident and see that social aspect of it, I think that actually helps as well. When you put your money, let's say in Fidelity, and I'm not talking bad about these companies, or Fidelity or Vanguard, it's just you put your money in, you just let it sit. That's okay. But for me, I would actually like to be hands-on and see where my money's at.
Totally. Walter, what does the perfect mobile home park look like in your eyes and why?
The perfect mobile home park is actually when you see an imperfect situation. What I mean by that, when you actually see a dilapidated mobile home park, and I'm just going to call it a trailer park because, that's the era, and it's actually fallen off, fallen to the ground, and it looks like a shanty, and you're able to put in a new home and still, profit, but help another, I would say human, that's actually a perfect park to actually buy. I mean, we have our criteria, of course, population, income, rents in the area. But when you're actually able to help people, I think that's really important.
Yeah, creating that win-win. Tell us about that buying criteria. What does your buy box look like?
So our buy box, we look for population. That's one. We look for income. We actually look for rental comps in the area, like a 2-bedroom or 3-bedroom. And we look for, I wouldn't say a path of growth, is because most mobile home parks actually been there for the 50s or 60s, as you mentioned. And we look at for employers.
Yeah. Nice. No, those are good. Yeah, good things to look at. Mm-hmm. Is there a size requirement? You said you'll buy with private utilities. Anything else, mobile home park specific that we can point out?
So I don't want to be hypocritical when I say this. So we usually look for parks that are 80 spaces and up, but we're actually looking for a park. We're looking at a park right now that's 50 spaces. And you're saying, okay, well, why are you being hypocritical? Well, we can actually buy this park and create $10 million worth of, or $11 million worth of equity. So that's hard to pass up.
Wow. And how can you do that?
Well, it's Phoenix proper, and so that's how we're able to capitalize on the income at a 6.5 or 6 cap. It'll be valued between 18 and 21 million.
Wow. And how much are lot rents in that park?
Lot rents on that one, I think they're 700.
Wow.
But we're going to do something a little bit different. So I don't want to give my secret sauce.
That's just a lot of value. I'm just saying, like, that's a lot of value for 52 lots that's already at 700. Like, unless you're like tearing this thing down and building a multifamily apartment complex on the site,
right.
How do you add $10 to $15 million worth of value? Just give us a little bit of the secret sauce. You don't have to go in too deep.
Okay. So how do I explain this? I'm actually being on a podcast and I don't want to skate around in the bush. So if I tell you, then I'm creating a whole bunch of competition. So, but I'll tell you, who cares? So. Do you have a calculator in front of you?
I do. Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Well, we'll go through this real quick.
Yeah.
So you can actually do this. And so let's just say in Phoenix, you can do public housing, right?
Mm-hmm.
and it's not called section, it's called like housing vouchers. Mm-hmm. So for three bedroom, two bath, I think we're buying it for about 46,000, right? So City of Phoenix will pay us 2863. So yeah, so put 2863
like by the bedroom.
Yeah, so they go by bedrooms. Right. So it's 2863 times 52. What do you have?
Times 52 gives you 148,876.
Times 12.
Times 12 is just under 1.8 million.
All right, mine, because we have expenses, because so mine is, let's say 40%. The brand new home is nothing that's actually going to get repaired anytime soon.
Yeah, so take away 40% gives you 1,071,907.
Okay, since it's a brand new park, essentially, and nothing, and we are taking our expenses, we already calculated expenses. So divide that by like a 5 cap.
Divided by 0.05. gives us 21 million.
Right.
So you're capitalizing all the park owned home income and everything, but you're making it this like Section 8, you know, housing community, which is a unique model. That's interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. No, I appreciate you sharing the sauce with us, but yeah, that's a different model. I haven't heard anyone doing that, that are like converting it, you know, to the subsidized housing mm-hmm. method. So. Very cool.
Yeah. So there's no way you can actually cap with housing vouchers. There's no way you can actually put park rent versus, you know, if you own park owned homes and lot space, they actually you capitalize the whole thing.
Wow. Yeah. And have you done this before and then like sold it off at that five?
No, we're actually doing it right now. Yeah, we're doing it right now.
You're testing it out. Yeah. Man. Well, good luck, dude. That is that's an interesting model where you're doing it like by the bedroom. I know in the Frank and Dave boot camp, they did, there was a lady down here in Orlando where I live that has like a sex offender park. Have you heard of that? Where she's renting out the rooms to different sex offenders. And it was, you know, they weren't paying $28.63 a month, but you know, it was another way. She was just maxing out the income to these people that really needed housing.
I heard about that. That's actually in 2012 when I started researching mobile home parks. I heard about there's a sex offender one, and there's actually a new mobile home park. I kid you not, it's like a it's part of the rules and regulations. Like people just walk new. It's the wildest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, that's out there. Oh man, there's a lot of ways, right? A lot of niches that can be created in this space. Wow, that's wild. Well, Walter, what do you think is the biggest threat to mobile home park investing?
The government.
Government regulation. Control, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So being on the board, the city of Mesa, and being on the board of the association, we're starting to see a lot of legislation be introduced. Not all of them are passing, but we have lobbyists in both, city of Mesa and the association. We're starting to see these laws that from the lawmakers that actually don't understand how mobile home parks are actually operating.
Yeah. No. And then they kind of cut your legs out from under you. So that's
yes.
So yeah, how are you combating that? Because I mean, you're kind of, you know, teaming up with them, right, to offer a lot of affordable housing units. I mean, if you got 52 times three, that's 156, you know, units, right, bedrooms that you're able to rent out and add to, you know, that area in Phoenix proper. Like how are they receiving that? Are they open to it, welcoming it?
They're welcoming it. I would say they're welcoming it on the surface. Mm. You know, when we're dealing with politicians, we're dealing with politics. and so I don't think they're receiving it when they actually, you know, they'll look at something and then just, yeah, we want affordable housing. But do I think they're actually maybe advocating for the true affordable housing? I would say no.
Mm. Okay. Walter, thank you.
Because they don't make any money.
They don't make any money out of it, I'm sure. And, with mobile home parks in general, you know, there's just a lot of headwinds, right? From just the cost to put a child through public school, right? It costs like approximately $12,000 a year, you know, and then the taxes on the individual mobile homes are maybe $500. So yeah, I get it. There's some financial, you know, disincentives there. And then some other reasons. You know, from new development, why it's hard to get, you know, NIMBY and things like that, why it's hard to get a new park developed. So, yeah, I totally get it. Walter, thank you so much for all these golden nuggets. If any of our listeners would like to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, so Walter at SonosCapital.com, W-E-L-T-E-R at Sonos, S-O-N-O-S, capital.com. Or give me a call at my office, 480-674-2035.
Awesome.
That's the best way.
That, yeah. We'll put that in the show notes as well, so that's available for everybody. Before we log off, Walter, what's one more last bit of important advice you would give an interested passive mobile home park investor before we log off?
Learn as much as you can about mobile home parks, and not necessarily as you want to invest as a passive investor, but really understand the actual opportunity it is in this actual space. So I don't think this space is going anywhere anytime soon. And I think a passive investor can actually have some tremendous financial opportunities in this space.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for coming on the show, Walter.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
That's it for today, folks. Here's a quick reminder. Please leave a review if you got value out of this episode. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Hey, are you getting value out of this show? If so, would you mind please going over to iTunes and leaving the show a quick 5-star review? I have a goal of hitting over 100 5-star reviews by the end of 2021. And it would mean the absolute world to me if you could help contribute to that. Thanks ahead of time for making my day with your 5-star review of the show.